Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise. I'm your host, David Price. Thanks for joining me today. You will hear from Steve, who has a few minutes on Thor, and you'll hear from Rick and the Colonel. They're back with some Smash Tales. So we're going to get right to it. I'll be back to talk about two one-shots when the guys are done. Talk to you in a little bit.
Greetings, true believers! A big smash-size welcome back to the planet Earth for the Incredible Hulk, and rolling out the welcome wagon is a mega-gathering of epic proportions. Get ready for new cast members and guest stars galore as we shake off the dust of the crossroads and breathe deep some of that fresh New Mexico air. I'm Rick Hansen, and with me, as always, is the ever-loving, blue-eyed Colonel Mooseblood to bring you another story from the vault of Marvel's mightiest mortal, the Incredible Hulk.
In our last Titanic tale, we brought you the Hulk's return from the crossroads, courtesy of Alpha Flight, followed by a devastating battle in Vancouver, Canada, and then a showdown in the desert between the Jade Giant and Doc Samson at the Hulk's place of birth, Gamma Base. After knocking out the Hulk with his sucker punch, partially with the assistance of Bruce Banner, Doc Samson pledged to free Banner from his green-skinned alter ego forever.
A big thanks again to Gary M. Miller for his addition to the Alpha Flight Hulk crossover that completed our story last month. Gary has a great blog called The All-New, All-Daring Delusional Honesty that you can read for free online, where he recently did a four-part article on John Byrne's work and unfulfilled plans for the Hulk. It was really fascinating reading for yours truly, and you can find links to it on the Smash Tales Facebook page, though you may have to scroll down to some of the older posts. Today's story encompasses the events from Incredible Hulk numbers 315, titled Freedom, and 316, titled Battleground. The creative team is made up of John Byrne as writer, cover artist, and interior artist, Keith Williams assisting on inks, Andy Yunchus with colors, Rick Parker with lettering, Denny O'Neill as editor, and Jim Wildman Shooter as editor-in-chief. This era of Marvel Comics had begun phasing out the Comics Code Authority seal to its direct sales market, and between these two issues, the price grew from 65 cents on number 315 to 75 cents on issue 316. Without further ado, I hereby christen thee the SS Smash Tale!
Let Hulk go! You cannot hold Hulk! Hulk is stronger than you!
Trapped within a cube of thick concrete, the Incredible Hulk pounds away at the walls, howling away at his captor.
Do you hear me, Banner? Puny Banner! Let Hulk go!
Outside the chamber, Bruce Banner stands at the hydraulic machine that braces the seal on the Hulk's prison. A large titanium shaft keeps closed a 12-foot-thick stone mass that has trapped the Hulk into a small chamber designed to hold the powerful monster.
No, never, never again! You've ruled my life for too long, Hulk! You've stolen from me everything I ever cared for, ever loved! Well, no more, Hulk! You're finally caged, finally imprisoned, and you're going to stay that way, Hulk! Stay locked away, where you'll never hurt anyone, ever again!
Ha! Puny Banner is a fool! Puny Banner has always been a fool! Look around you, Puny Banner! You may have Hulk locked away in this room, but you are locked away too! You have no life without Hulk!
Maybe you're right, Hulk, but what does it matter? Perhaps I deserve no better. I brought you into this world, Hulk. I can keep you out of it. I owe that much to the world at least. No!
Bruce Banner shouts and recoils in disbelief as the titanium shaft is shredded by the blow from out inside the chamber that cannot be resisted. The prison's brace shattered, the pounding inside grows louder and louder and closer until the rocky walls around Bruce Banner begin to fall around him, and then... No!
Yes! Hulk is free again! And Hulk will smash you, Banner!
The Hulk stands where there used to be a rocky prison, hovering over Bruce Banner like a nightmare become reality. True to his word, as always, the Hulk attempts to smash Banner with a blow of his mighty fists, but as Banner just barely evades the punch, Hulk's fist crashes into the wall behind his alter ego. Then, Banner looks behind him.
Daylight, you've cracked through to the surface. Only one chance, then.
He climbs into the fissure caused by the Hulk's blow, quickly scaling the inside of the narrow cave.
If I can squeeze through, get out into the open.
Banner, you won't escape that easy. You won't escape at all.
With one demonstration of his phenomenal strength, the Incredible Hulk reaches into the rocky fissure and thrusts hundreds of tons of earth aside to make a gap large enough for him to escape. Bruce Banner, finally reaching the surface, attempts to run from the raging behemoth.
Do you hear me, Banner? You cannot escape, Hulk. Wherever you go, Hulk will follow.
No!
Leaping to the surface, the Hulk reaches Banner and traps his prey underneath his immovable girth, holding the man's face to the ground with a hand twice as large as Banner's entire head.
Yes, puny Banner, yes! Hulk is not a monster, not a demon you can run and hide from. Hulk is you! Hulk is your own dark thoughts, your anger, your rage. Now Hulk will... Huh? Banner is gone?
Mysteriously, Bruce Banner disappears from under the Hulk's grip and reappears standing atop a nearby hillside.
Banner! How did you get over there? Stupid Banner always has tricks. This time Hulk will not talk. Hulk will... Huh?
The figure of his nemesis vanishes once again as the Hulk leaps toward it, this time reappearing even further away.
Banner is gone again! Hulk does not understand how puny Banner can move so fast, but it will not help puny Banner. Hulk will chase you. Hulk will catch you. But Hulk chases. Hulk moves as fast as he can. But Banner gets farther away. Banner is gone. And Hulk cannot think.
Left alone in the middle of a vast desert, the Hulk can no longer run, or even stand, or even speak. But this is not the real world. Only the subconscious mind of our emerald-hued hero. In what we humans understand as reality, we pull back from the mental plane and find a large room filled with incredibly advanced technology. Great electronic machines inserting their mechanical limbs into a tank filled with amniotic-like, nutrient-rich fluid. Inside the tank, we see the silhouettes of two humanoid beings, one large and green, the other smaller and pink.
Separation complete.
He stopped hallucinating. Disconnect the equipment! Disconnect! Disconnect!
The awesome mechanisms hum down to a still silence as a squad of technicians race about, making final adjustments. The sometime superhero known as Doc Samson descends the staircase of an overhead monitoring station, certain that he has succeeded in his endeavor. The green-haired psychologist wears his traditional red muscle shirt with a yellow lightning bolt across his chest. The noticeable bandage wrapped around his right hand serves as a reminder of the price his bones paid for punching the Hulk into unconsciousness. Two men in protective suits slowly lift a pinkish body out of the tank.
Pulse and respiration within expected range.
Scanning blood pressure a little low.
Proceed with electroencephalogram.
EEG scans operating. Readings coming in.
It's Banner, all right.
But a very weak signal. He's in a deep coma. Not surprising, really. He has just gone through an experience probably more traumatic than being born.
While Bruce Banner's unconscious form lies on an examination table, Doc Samson looks through a glass partition to the nutrient bath within. On views the also-unconscious body of the Incredible Hulk.
The form resting inside this tank is now a true tabula rasa. A blank slate. Without memory, without personality of his own. Without any of the intellectual or emotional factors that constitute a human being. This is very exciting, of course. The Hulk now represents a fabulous laboratory of the mind. He can now be trained, developed as a child would be. In time, he might even be able to re-enter society, this time as a whole, functioning human.
Hold the phone, Muscles.
Who? Clay. Clay Quartermain. What are you doing here? This project doesn't involve S.H.I.E.L.D.
Come on, Doc. You're a big boy now. You should know that S.H.I.E.L.D.'s involved in just about everything.
Including the disposition of your big green buddy there.
Disposition? What in blazes are you talking about, Quartermain? I was promised complete and final authority on this project.
Then I guess you were lied to, Doc. So sorry, but what can I do? As far as S.H.I.E.L.D. is concerned, the Hulk is what we call a high-potential hostile. And that's our responsibility to make sure that make sure it doesn't do anything that might endanger the civilian populace ever again.
A while later, the technicians have been holed up in a trailer under the guard of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. The locked door surprisingly swings open, and in the doorway stands Leonard Sampson himself.
Doc, you're still free?
In a manner of speaking, I still have some clout with S.H.I.E.L.D., though not enough, obviously.
What's been happening? How's Dr. Banner?
Still comatose. I've arranged for him to be transferred to La Paloma Medical Center in town. I know a hotshot doctor there. He'll take good care of Banner.
And the Hulk? What about it?
He will be loaded onto special S.H.I.E.L.D. transport and moved to a top-secret location for disposal.
You mean they're going to kill him? Can they do that? I mean, does S.H.I.E.L.D. have the power or the right?
I'm fairly certain that they have the necessary technology to reduce him to his basic atoms. And I'm very sure they won't hesitate to do so, now that Bruce Banner is no longer in jeopardy. Part of me wonders if they're right. If I'd be wrong to do anything to interfere. Yet another part of me hears the Hulk crying out for help, like an infant. And so I've had to make perhaps the hardest decision of my life. I'm going to rescue the Hulk!
And we'll be right back after these important commercial messages.
Win a complete set of GoBot toys! Announcing the Nestle Quick Challenge of the GoBots game. 250,000 prizes!
See a specially marked packages of Nestle Quick for a free instant winner game card. Grand prize, complete set of GoBot toys. First prize, GoBot messenger vehicle. Second prize, GoBot action figure.
See specially marked packages for full details. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. By law. For a free game card, write to Nestle Quick GoBot card. Syracuse, New York.
Five new adventures from Family Home Entertainment on video cassette. First, the Transformers.
I'll get you, Megatron. No, you won't, Starscream.
Freedom is the right of all sentient beings.
Next, it's G.I. Joe, a real American hero.
Cobra Commander is a fool.
On video cassette, The Transformers and G.I. Joe by Family Home Entertainment. Yeah!
We now return to The Transformers.
Okay, Leno pal. The Hulk is safely on his way to the disposal site, and I've sent your friends back home. Time for you and me to... Samson?
Clay Quartermain enters the quarters where S.H.I.E.L.D. has been keeping Leonard Sampson confined and under close watch. Only instead of the sometime superhero known as Doc Sampson inside waiting for him, he finds an empty room. Looking down, he sees a freshly excavated hole in the floor of the cabin.
Oh, you fools! Didn't you have anyone posted inside his quarters?
No, sir. We didn't. I mean, who'd have guessed he'd tunnel his way out? But he couldn't have gotten far, can he?
Are you serious, Field Agent? Doc Sampson is nearly as strong as the Hulk. He could burrow through the soil around here like a mole through your auntie's tulip bed. He could be miles away by now.
In fact, miles away from Gamma Base, we see a trio of S.H.I.E.L.D. helicopters following an armored transport vehicle as it makes its way down an isolated New Mexico highway. Everything has been quiet and without incident on this trip, when all of a sudden...
Quartermain to follow one. Quartermain to follow one. Red alert. Repeat, red alert. Doc Sampson has escaped. He could be heading for you. Do you copy?
Follow one to Quartermain. Message received and understood. We'll be ready if he tries to intercept.
While keeping their eyes peeled for threats on the road or in the air, the last thing the pilots expect is a threat from...
Underground.
Two muscular hands suddenly burst through the road and right in front of the transport vehicle. Those hands belong to Doc Sampson. As he grabs a hold of the underside of the vehicle just as it passes over him and clings to the underside, ripping open the metal frame beyond the gaze of the helicopters overhead, Sampson crawls up into the vehicle in quite a disheveled state.
Ugh,
So much for my Indiana Jones impression. Now, Hulk, poor devil, they got you plugged into a neuro-neutralizer. That's typical military redundancy for you. The Hulk has no mind of his own anymore, so they wire him to a device designed to neutralize brain activity. But this could work right into my plan. It's simple enough matter for me to reverse the process. There! The Hulk is now being stimulated instead of stymied.
After reversing the neuro-neutralizer keeping the Hulk suppressed, Doc Samson makes his way toward the front of the vehicle.
Now, let's take care of the driver and... Well, well, this vehicle is remote-controlled. Probably by an operator on one of those following copters. Excellent, excellent! Without an additional human lives to worry about, I don't need to be subtle.
Taking over the vehicle's controls, the super-powered psychologist veers off of the road and sends the vehicle flying over a nearby cliff! The transport careens downward and crashes in a fiery explosion, large enough that it obscures all wreckage from view by the overhead helicopters.
Incredible! Nothing could have survived that! Base from Follow 1! Base from Follow 1! The transport vehicle has been wrecked in a massive explosion. No possibility of Wait a second! It's him! The Hulk is still alive! He appears uninjured! Wait, he's doing something! He spotted us!
The Incredible Hulk, now fully awake, picks up a pile of metal from the burning wreckage, and he hurls it right at the nearest helicopter!
Emergency evasive action! Quick! Quick!
Baseball 2, the Hulk is alive and he's hostile! All units attack! Attack! Attack!
Foul 4 to base. 1 and 2 destroyed. Hulk now heading north, northwest. Set up intercept, we'll pursue and monitor.
As the two remaining copters follow the leaping Hulk off toward a distant mountain range, we see a figure slowly crawl his way out of the wreckage. He is singed on all sides, his blue pants and red muscle shirt now in tatters.
I was wrong, somehow. Even without Banner, without any trace of a human psyche, the Hulk is still a creature of undiluted rage. In fact, Banner's personality was probably a moderating influence, albeit only slight one. Reversing the neuro-neutralizer brought the Hulk to full consciousness, to the peak of his anger. All this destruction, all this death, is my fault. But I can make up for it. I can yet vindicate myself. I can track down the Hulk once again, and this time, I will kill him.
In a nearby town, a medical center is just turning over for the night shift, when the doors of the lobby slide open, and a visitor enters the admitting area.
Confirm only that the Incredible Hulk was responsible in some way for the tragedy. Repeating that lead story, a bizarre double helicopter crash in the desert east of La Paloma, New Mexico, has claimed at least 4 lives.
Awful. Just awful.
Excuse me? I was told Bruce Banner had been brought here, but then the radio said something about the Hulk.
Crazy, isn't it, honey? Bruce Banner's here, all right. But don't ask me how that's possible with the Hulk still being on the loose. Well, I'm afraid Dr. Banner isn't allowed visitors, Miss...
Ross. My name is Betty Ross.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
We've got a special offer from Dorman's Cheese.
A Spider-Man backpack. Spider-Man on a durable red 100% nylon backpack with reflective tape for nighttime safety. It's up to a $9.95 value, and it's yours for only $2.95 and 6 UPC symbols from the packages of delicious Dorman's American Singles. This washable and waterproof backpack is just great for school. So get Dorman's American Cheese Singles today, and get your order in soon.
Dorman's Cheese. More cheese than a Godzilla movie.
Yo, Hulkamaniacs, it's me, Hulk Hogan. Check out my new look. Brother, I was at Arby's scarfing down a chicken cordon bleu. That natural chicken tastes righteous. That's because it's not all pumped up with phosphates and fillers, which gave the Hulkster an idea. Maybe I don't need to be pumped up either. Who needs to be doing bench presses and deadlifts all day?
Now all of Arby's chicken is made with 100% all-natural, all-delicious chicken. Try our chicken cordon bleu with ham and melted Swiss. It'll have you saying,
I'm thinking Arby's, brother.
Beware, Airwolf is coming. Jan Michael Vincent. Ernest Borgnine. Beware, Airwolf is coming.
We now return to the Transformers.
Where is he? Where is Bruce Banner? Take me to him or I'll put the whole bunch of you in the hospital.
Bursting through the doors of the Paloma Medical Center comes a tall, green-skinned woman, catching the eye of every nurse, patient, and orderly in the hallway.
Now there is a redundant statement if I ever heard one. In case it's escaped your attention, this is a hospital. Now, who are you supposed to be, lady? President of the Bruce Banner fan club?
I'm Jennifer Walters, and I just happen to be Bruce Banner's cousin. Or isn't that obvious? I received an urgent message telling me that he'd been brought here.
Message? I authorized no messages.
No, I sent it. Hello, Miss Walters. I'm Betty Ross.
Betty Ross? The Betty Ross? Somehow you're not at all what I pictured.
Bruce has mentioned me to you?
Only in every letter he ever wrote to me. I'm pleased to meet you, Miss Ross. How's Doc? I mean Bruce.
Please call me Betty. And may I call you Jennifer? Thanks. I'm afraid Bruce ain't all well. That's why I contacted you. As his only living relative, there's an important decision only you can make. A decision that could mean life or a living death for Bruce Banner.
Miles away, in the suburban town of Stone Ridge, New Mexico, the Incredible Hulk, a truly mindless mountain of strength and fury, wreaks havoc across the town. The devastation he has caused is enormous and can be seen from high above the evacuated community. Yet it is also from high above that two figures come rocketing toward their prey. Not unlike hawks diving upon a rodent, it becomes clear that these are men flying in pursuit of the Hulk. One clad in red and white armor, being propelled by boot jets. The other in spandex, sunglasses, and rocket boosters attached to his belt.
There he is! You hang back a while, Wonder Man! I've tangled with the Hulk before. You haven't.
No argument, Iron Man.
Okay, Mean Green. The party's over. Very articulate. But then I shouldn't expect much more these days, should I?
Flying toward the Hulk at great speed, Iron Man pounds the Hulk with a left-handed punch and follows up with a devastating blast of his repulsors.
And before you can gather any wits you may have, a quick zap of my repulsor rays. Now if you have any brains at all, you'll stay down.
Without pausing for even a second, the Hulk recovers from Iron Man's repulsor ray blast and leaps at the armored Avenger.
Wonder Man, a little assistance if you please.
Way ahead of you, Shellhead.
Wonder Man flies in right above the leaping Hulk, grabs the Jade Giant by his ankle, and flips the Hulk head over heels, who lands on the ground with all of his 1,000 pounds crashing squarely on his head. Within a moment's time, however, the Hulk rights himself, grabs a nearby car, and throws it towards Wonder Man at lightning speed.
Uh-oh, I was hoping he wouldn't recover that fast.
Iron Man rushes to Wonder Man's side and splits the car into two pieces with his repulsor rays.
Not to worry, Wonder Man. This car probably wouldn't do more than shred your t-shirt, but I can save you the expense of a new one.
Many thanks, Iron Man. What are we gonna do now? How are we gonna stop that monster?
We're not forgetting just what it is we're up against, Simon. We've both been pulling our punches, as if we would if Bruce Banner was still trapped inside the Hulk. But that's no longer the case. There's nothing even remotely human in there anymore. Nothing at all. And here he comes again.
How can anything big move so fast?
Hulk launches himself toward the two Avengers and grabs Iron Man, lifting him high into the air while at the same time winding up his other arm for a swing at Wonder Man.
Blast it! I'm still not compensating for the sheer ferocity of his attacks! Simon, look out!
As the Hulk continues to pound away at the two powerhouses from the West Coast Avengers, we take a look back at La Paloma Medical Center, where Jennifer Walters, a.k.a. the Sensational She-Hulk, is having a civilized chat in the office of Bruce Banner's physician, Dr. Fisher.
All right, Doctor. I think it's time you got me filled in on the details. What's this Miss Ross was going on about my decision being the difference between Doc's life or living death? I hope she was being melodramatic.
Not at all, Miss Walters. If anything, she stated the situation perfectly. Dr. Sampson had Banner brought here because he knows of my work in psychosimulation. Now that Dr. Banner has been physically separated from the living prison of the Hulk, his mind's response has been to shut down. The method of treatment I'm proposing could pull him out of that bottomless pit, or it could plunge him even deeper into it, completely and irrevocably beyond our power to aid him. It's up to you, Miss Walters, to decide what we must do now.
And after these messages, we'll be right back.
Challenge of the Gobots! They're awesome! Yeah!
Check local TV listings for time and station.
Gobots!
Head of a Bear Productions.
Bang, bang, bang! Oh, howdy, partner. Time for timer.
Do you ever get that hungry feeling after school?
Boy, I do. I'm so hungry, I could eat a wagon wheel.
When I'm slow on the draw and I need something to chaw, I hanker for a hunk of cheese. When my 10-gallon hats are feeling 5 gallons flat, I got something planned, which is little cheese sandwiches. Come on! Here's a great little snack to tide you over till dinner. If you want something delicious and nutritious, cheese is a super snack. Look, a wagon wheel. When my get up and go has got up and went, I hanker for a hunk of cheese. When I'm dancing a hold down and my boots kind of slow down, or any time I'm weak in the knees, I hanker for a hunk of, a slab or slice of chunk of, a snacker day is a winner, and yet won't spoil my dinner. I hanker for a hunk of cheese. Yahoo!
Dr. David Banner, physician, scientist, searching for a way to tap into the hidden strengths that all humans have. A startling metamorphosis occurs.
Hi, this is Lou Ferrigno, sometimes known as the Incredible Hulk. You can watch the Incredible Hulk right here on KREP Channel 14. Keep watching and don't make me angry.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Now return to the Transformers.
While Bruce Banner's life hangs in the balance of She-Hulk's decision, let's not forget there is a fight going on the other side of the state. Wonder Man has been dispatched and Iron Man is on the ground, sparks flying out of his armor, and the Hulk stalking the armored Avenger.
Blast it all! That little squeeze he gave me damaged my chest plate, and it'll only take a few seconds to repair the fault, but he's not going to give me a few seconds.
Unexpectedly, a muscular being falls directly atop the advancing Hulk, landing feet first and driving the Gamma Spawn Goliath down into the crust of the Earth.
Worry not, Iron Man. The son of Zeus is here.
Hercules, but you can't fly?
Of course not, Armored One, but the Submariner can. 'Twas he that didst transport me hither from New York, and didst drop me from a mighty height.
Looks as if we got here just in time, Hercules. These West Coast Avengers don't seem to be doing that well.
As the Lion of Olympus assists Iron Man and Namor flies near the battle scene, Wonder Man recovers his wits and prepares to rejoin the fray.
Big talk, Fishface. I suppose you think that you can do better?
Of a certainty. The two of you may possess great power, but you are, after all, mere mortals. Hercules and I are much more than human.
And so it would seem is our foe. Zounds!
From underneath the ground, the Hulk bursts forth like a cork from a champagne bottle, lifting Hercules into the air and roaring his rage to all his enemies.
His X-Factor is still at work. The madder he gets, the stronger he gets. And without Banner as a moderating influence, there's no limit to his rage.
Astonishing. Our first assault should have rendered him senseless. But fear not, Hercules. The Avenging Sun has faced this beast before and triumphed.
Namor flies at the Hulk and attacks the Jade Giant with all of his formidable power, but the Hulk has no fear for his safety, only rage for his foes, and he sends Namor crashing away into a crumbling building.
Feared of my father! he didst toss aside the Submariner as if he were but a thistledown. Verily, this jade-hued titan may well demand the loosing of the greatest power on Earth before he falls. 'Tis fortunate, then, that Hercules possesses such power.
Grabbing a large steel pipe conduit from the town's damaged infrastructure, Hercules uses it like a baseball bat and smashes the Hulk into another building!
Hercules, watch out!
Zounds! Alright, this is just stupid. We're the biggest guns the Avengers have.
And he is just a mindless mass of muscle.
So let's finish this up fast.
No!
Who in?
Get away from him! All of you! He's mine!
Doc Samson bowls his way through the group of Avengers, swinging away and knocking both Namor and Iron Man down in the process. Clad in a brand new outfit of red leather pants, vest, and fingerless gloves, he is quickly attended to by Wonder Man.
Buddy, I don't know who you think you are, but you got a serious personality problem, and I'm just the boy to solve it for you.
Wrong, Wonder Man. In peak condition, you may well be stronger than me, but you've just been through a battle with the Hulk. Your power level is low. You're no match for me now.
That's Doc Samson. Even with the new outfit, I'd know him anywhere. But why the devil is he fighting us?
That matters little, Iron Man. He has dared lay hands upon a prince of Atlantis. For that, he must be punished!
As Iron Man and Namor join Wonder Man in repelling the intrusion of Doc Samson, Hercules is trading blows one-on-one with the Hulk.
Zounds! 'Twould seem my allies have found another foe, one who fights with his mind as well as might. Therefore a warrior more worthy of the power of Hercules. So bide a while, Titan, I will return to thee anon.
Hey, look at the Hulk. He's just wandering off, as if he's lost interest. Gotta get after him.
He's my responsibility. I'll take care of him.
That's what you keep saying, Samson. But so far, we haven't seen anything to back it up. You only have a fraction of the Hulk's strength. Alone, you don't stand a chance.
Iron Man is absolutely correct. We are best suited to deal with this menace.
Are you Fishman? Are you? Take a good look around, Namor, and then tell me who is best suited to stop the Hulk.
Both the West and East Coast Avengers gaze around in all directions at the town around them, seeing vast destruction as though a massive bomb had gone off in this highly populated area. They are stunned into silence at witnessing the carnage in which they have participated.
You four are easily the most powerful the current Avengers roster has to offer, and that's why it's insanity for you to continue pursuing the Hulk. All by himself, he carved a swath through this town that'll take years to rebuild. But if all five of you went at it for any length of time, you could level half of New Mexico. Only one of us can stop the Hulk without adding to damage and death. And that one has got to be me.
Okay, your logic is indisputable, Samson, but you still haven't explained why you should be the one to go after the Hulk and not one of us. After all, we're all more powerful than you.
If it wasn't for my interference, none of this would have been happening. You see, I freed the Hulk.
What, you mean all this death and destruction is your fault?
Hold, Wonder Man! The son of Zeus doth now begin to understand this fire that burns in the eyes of the one called Samson. 'Tis for him an affair of honor!
Maybe. Or maybe one of vindication. I messed up. Badly. And this is my only hope of putting it to rights. The Hulk must be stopped, no matter the costs, and by my hand!
Very well, Samson. I think I can speak for all of us. You can have your chance. But understand this, mister. We're not handing you an open-ended schedule here.
You tell him, Shellhead.
We're going to be watching you, and the Hulk. Watching every move you make. And if you don't deal with this problem quickly and completely, the Avengers will be back. And in full force.
Back at the Paloma Medical Center, the woman who became a superhero after receiving a life-saving blood transfusion from her cousin, Bruce Banner, now walks side by side with the doctor, whom she hopes will now be able to save his life. While still garnering stares from the hospital staff as she walks down the hallway, the sensational She-Hulk has finally decided that, like her namesake, when in doubt, act!
You have made the right decision, Miss Walters. Really, the only decision.
I hope so, Doctor. After all Bruce has done for me,
meant to me over the years. If I did anything now that might hurt him, there's no way I could ever forgive myself.
I'm pretty sure that won't be the case. And anyway, to take a more positive point of view, in the long run, you'll be doing him a favor. You're freeing him from, this.
Jen Walters and the doctor enter Bruce Banner's hospital room. His frail, weak body lies comatose while machines keep his breathing steady and monitor all of his vital signs. Betty Ross has been at his side this whole time, sitting next to his bed, keeping watch for any sign that her former lover is regaining consciousness.
Jen, you've decided?
Yes, Miss Ross. Miss Walters has signed the necessary papers. We're going with the test.
Oh, thank you.
She-Hulk realizes just how much strain they have both been under and puts her hands on Betty's shoulders. Both women stand away from the bed, unsure of what will be happening once the experimental treatment begins.
Do you want us to leave you alone with Bruce, Doctor?
That won't be necessary. The procedure itself is very simple. Just an injection of my formula 87HB into his IV. The real battleground will be deep within Banner's brain. 87HB is a controlled hallucinogen, similar to the others used in treatment of inhibited psyches. What we're hoping, praying it will do here, is chip away the blocks that Banner has created within his own subconscious. When it happens, it will happen quickly. Wait a minute. It's starting to happen.
The comatose physicist begins to shake his head, side to side. Perspiration flows down his brow, and suddenly his eyes pop open.
Yes! Sudden increased motor activity. Distinct peaking in his brainwave activity. But is he accepting the medication or fighting it?
All three witnesses watch nervously, helplessly, as Bruce Banner thrusts his head up and down, his fingers and toes clench, his teeth gnash, and all signs of incredible turmoil within the man's mind. When suddenly, his entire body contorts with a mighty lurch that nearly sends Bruce Banner flying from the hospital bed!
Whee!
Bruce!
Unable to simply watch anymore, Betty rushes to his side and takes Bruce's head into her hands, studying his face for any sign of consciousness.
Oh, Bruce, my darling, my poor darling. Speak to me, Bruce. Please, please speak to me. You must speak to me. You've got to be all right.
Betty.
He's okay! He's okay! You did it, Doctor! You really did it!
Yes, the experiment has been a success. It would seem that Bruce Banner is going to be all right. For the first time in a long, long time, he's got a chance at a normal life again.
To be continued. Bullpen Bulletins announces the winners of the official Marvel Comics tryout contest that began more than a year ago today. For those of you who submitted their pages from the official Marvel Comics tryout book or comparable samples, the best in each category have been selected for his or her first professional comics job. And the winners are...
Plotter and Scripter.
Chuck Duffy of Los Angeles, California.
Penciler.
Mark Bagley of Marletta, Florida.
Inker.
Doug Hazelwood of Victoria, Texas.
Letterer.
Robin Riggs of East Sussex, United Kingdom. And...
Colorist.
P. Janine Pasta of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Congratulations to you all. While the contest may be over, you can still try out for a job with Marvel as the search for talent remains fast and furious. Just send your submissions to Marvel Comics, Department T, 3087 Park Avenue South, New York, New York, 10016. And for you Marvel Noise listeners in Australia, get ready for the Australian Comic Convention 1986 at the Sydney Opera House with special guests Stan Lee, Will Eisner, Jim Steranko, and Franz Cantor. There are no letter pages in either of these issues, so instead we're comparing the roster of the Avengers now from the last time they faced the Hulk, to their incarnation we're seeing in the pages of the Hulk in these issues. When the Hulk last faced the Avengers, he had just been freed by Doctor Strange from the manipulations of Nightmare, and the Earth's Mightiest Heroes faced off against a Hulk without reason. They were only a single team at the time, and in their encounter with the Mindless Hulk, they were comprised of Vision, Thor, Star Fox, Captain Marvel, Mockingbird, and Scarlet Witch. when they next meet the Hulk in this current and the next upcoming issues. The West Coast team is formed of Iron Man, Wonder Man, Vision, Scarlet Witch, Tigra, Hawkeye, and Mockingbird. And the East Coast team retains one of its members from the last clash with the Hulk, Captain Marvel, who is joined by Captain America, Wasp, Black Knight, Hercules, and Namor. So get ready for, like I said before, guest stars galore. While She-Hulk has been a prominent on-again, off-again member of the Avengers, she played no role in the battle that took place in New York before the Hulk was exiled to the crossroads. She was on the Avengers roster in the issues of Avengers, immediately preceding their showdown with the Jade Giant, but then she returned to the team right afterwards as well. So she was mysteriously absent during that fight.
It's magic. We don't gotta explain it.
She will, however, be an important player in this story, even though she is not a current member of either team. And on another front, this issue is the first time Betty Ross and She-Hulk have ever met. And it sure seems like they will go on to be good pals for a long time to come. Right, Smash fans?
We love social networking here in the Smash Cave, so be sure to go to Facebook and join our fan page. It's easy to find by doing a search, or just go to facebook.com/SmashTales. And get access to all the goodies we post there for your information and enjoyment. For those of you with access to the issues of The Incredible Hulk, stop by our page and let us know your thoughts on the change between Bill Mantlo's work and John Byrne. We notice a drastic difference already, namely the absence of narration boxes in Byrne's stories. His work is very dialogue-driven, whereas Bill Mantlo was a master of exposition, which made our job at the Smash Tales all that easier.
Friend of the show and a prince among men, Adam Bessignotti, asked us to help pimp his various outlets, first one being his book, Deus Ex Comica.
Product placement.
Which I have read and is very good, especially if you are a comic fan.
Product placement.
Easily found on Amazon, and you should also track down the comic book X-01 and the Rock Solid Steel Bots from Action Lab. He's also a big fan of the Pop Comics Culture Club in Northeast Ohio. Consider yourself one of my girls, Adam, because you just got pimped.
Oh, snap, sons!
While we're at it, if you want to check out my second favorite show besides Marvel Noise, The Retroist is a fantastically entertaining and informative show on iTunes. It focuses on classic TV shows, video games, movies, and toys from many of our childhoods. Just over the last month, I enjoyed shows about Three's Company, ALF, Ghostbusters, Teddy Ruxpin, Airplane the Movie, and Dig Dug. And TheRetroist.com has multiple daily posts on a variety of retro topics, including one I recently submitted about another radioactive monster that just goes by the name of Godzilla.
You should read it. Coming your way soon! The Hulk smashes. Well, what do you expect at this point? Mindless monster mayhem galore? Will Doc Samson succeed in stopping the Green Goliath? How much time will the Avengers give him to achieve his goal before coming in and taking over? And now Bruce Banner is finally free of the Hulk in every way, shape, and form. Is it safe to say his life will be completely normal for the first time in ages? Be here next time and have your application filled out. Someone's recruiting a special team to go after old Greenskin. And while we won't spoil anything, we can tell you that it rhymes with Sulk Dusters. Make sure you cancel your New Mexico vacation plans, because there are going to be some serious remodeling happening in that joint. Join us next time, true believers, for a story titled, You're Probably Wondering Why I've Called You Today.
So until Hercules gives up fighting evil to be the designated hitter for the Chicago White Sox, I'm Rick Hansen.
And I'm Fumblemore.
Fare thee well!
Steve Raker here from the Comic Book Bunker, with Thor still on my mind. Well, first from rereading and skimming through just about every issue of Thor from the last 50 years of his title's publishing history for last month's massive retrospective segment with fellow Marvel noisemaker Tom Morris, to seeing the motion picture Thor on opening weekend with my wife, first movie we'd seen out since Iron Man 4 years ago, to yesterday joining my folks and seeing the movie again. This time, and after the benefit of having previewed the content, bringing my 6.5-year-old son, Kevin, who, with a pair of foam earplugs to cut the volume, did great. So, this time I've got for you a rundown of Thor collected editions. Let's face it, there's been a slew of recent Thor limited series projects, hardcover, and trade paperback collections over the last year in preparation for the movie's release. That's a lot of book, folks, and old Steve Raker's here to help guide you through what's currently available off the shelves. Now, of course, on the high-end hardcover end of the publishing line, you've got your choice of Marvel Thor Masterwork editions, the Marvel Masterwork hardcovers, which is now solicited through Volume 10, covering the entire initial Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Larry Lieber and Joe Sinnott, their entire run from Journey into Mystery 83 through the title change to Thor with issue 126, right up through Stan's last issue writing, 193, which includes the transition from Kirby Neil Adams issues and the first more than dozen issues penciled by Big John Buscema. And for those looking for the height of the Kirby Lee Kirby run, things really start picking up with the last part of Volume 3 and are in full stride by Marvel Masterworks Volume 4, just prior to the title name change. There's also a big ol' Thor Omnibus hardcover, Volume 1, which collects the first three Masterwork volumes. If you prefer the Omnibus format and have yet to experience this old material, I'd actually recommend taking a pass and waiting on Volume 2, which will really be a doozy, collecting the best of the best. Also, don't miss Thor Tales of Asgard, which has both an oversized hardcover and a softcover trade paperback edition. This collection reprints the Marvelized North Myth backup stories from the Journey into Mystery Thor title by Stan and Jack, with modern recoloring, which in some places is a bit much, and in other places looks really neat. If you remember from Tom and my marathon segment on Thor, Jerry Conway followed Stan on writing chores, then Roy Thomas and Bill Mantlo for a couple of transitional issues, and none of that material is collected in the modern age to my knowledge. Most of Len Wein's run is, though, collected in two hardcovers, Thor, If Asgard Should Perish, with John Buscema, and Thor, The Quest for Odin, with John Buscema and Walt Simonson, although you can barely tell with the heavy Tony DeZuniga finishes. If Asgard Should Perish collects Thor 242 to 253, where Thor joins Zarko and his servitor to save the future by confronting the destructive, backwards-in-time-traveling time twisters. Then Thor must deal with an Odin that seems to have become a mad dictator, and then begrudgingly joins Ulic the Troll on a mission to save his people in an effort to gain knowledge needed for a quest that takes place in the second of these complimentary hardcovers that collect most of Wein's run, The Quest for Odin, which collects Thor 255 to 266. Here, Thor is joined by Sif, the Warriors Three, and the Rigelian Recorder aboard the space-sailing vessel Starjammer on a quest for the Allfather that takes them to the remote celestial location known only as the Doomsday Star. Dun-dun! The classic Red Norvell surrogate Thor Death of Baldur story by Roy Thomas and John Buscema from Thor 272 to 278 is collected in the Thor Ragnarok trade paperback. There are two trade paperback volumes of Thor the Eternals Saga, which collects Thor Annual 7 and Thor 283 to 301, written by Rascally Roy Thomas, who's aided and abetted by Mark Gruenwald and Ralph Macchio, with art primarily by John Buscema, Walt Simonson, and Keith Pollard. The first trade of the two sets up Thor's epic encounter with Kirby's Eternals as they deal with the coming, inevitable judgment of the Earth by the Celestials, picking up on loose threads from both canceled series chronicling those Kirby creations. The second trade, before the climactic resolution of the Eternals' Celestial Saga that occurs in Thor 300, retreated to an incredible tour through various mythologies as Roy knits together several myth pantheons and reveals Asgard's secret history, that it and the Norse gods have a repeating life cycle that is ended by a reoccurring Ragnarok. Sound familiar to readers of Thor from the past decade? It should. And it's really neat, too, as it's revealed that the last Ragnarok occurred 2,000 years ago, and Surtur's ritualistic burning of Asgard at that time was actually the Star of Bethlehem, heralding the birth of Jesus with the death of the then-Norse gods. Really great stuff. Thor is Sigmund, Thor is Siegfried, a really dense, well-researched, careful tale that's almost as Alan Moore-ish as it is Roy Thomas-ish, if that makes any sense, as far as his care to the material and the research and the knitting of the mythologies together. There's also a Thor vs. Hercules trade paperback that collects various encounters and battles between these two heavyweights from over the decades. Now, Walt Simonson's fantastic run on Thor has been collected in several trade paperback volumes of Thor Visionaries, Walter Simonson, as well as the recent oversized hardcover Thor Omnibus by Walter Simonson, reprinting Thor 337 to 382 and the Balder the Brave limited series, all of which is written and drawn by Walt Simonson with Sal Buscema artwork on the proverbial back nine. The Omnibus is also recolored with modern recoloring, not as heavy-handed as the Tales of Asgard stuff, or maybe the color just fits into the bigger areas of negative space able to be colored that exists in Simonson's kind of wider shapes versus Kirby's more dense inking and intense noodling on some of that Asgardian armor and accoutrement. And of course, Walt's run introduced Beta Ray Bill. It showcased the return of Surtur and the death of Odin, Thor's Sigurd Jarlsson alter ego, his entrancement by Lorelei, the Enchantress's sister, the introduction of Malekith, the Dark Elf, and the Casket of Ancient Winters that was featured so prominently in the Thor movie, much to my delight, and the seemingly unstoppable Scourge, Thor's facial injuries from Hela, the armor, inhabiting the Destroyer. The hits just keep on coming, gang. Surprisingly, the only portion to my knowledge of Tom DeFalco and Ron Frenz's long run on Thor that's been collected is the trade paperback Thor vs. Seth, the Serpent God, which reprints Thor 395 through 400, covering just that, Seth attacking Asgard, in a tale that includes several other pantheons of gods, from the Heliotropics, etc. The Thor World Engine hardcover collects Thor's 491 through 494, reprinting a really wild story by Warren Ellis and Mike Diodato involving the World Tree Yggdrasil rejecting Thor from reality, the Enchantress, and a mortal trying to cause Ragnarok. And this story and some subsequent Thor issues, also by Diodato, but written by William Mesner Loebs, is also collected in the softcover Thor Visionaries Mike Diodato Volume 1 trade paperback. Dan Jurgensen's 80-issue run and relaunch of Thor is completely reprinted in a variety of trade paperback collections. You've got Thor by Dan Jurgens and John Romita Jr., volumes 1 through 4, Thor Across All Worlds, Thor The Death of Odin, Thor Lord of Asgard, Thor Gods on Earth, Thor Spiral, Thor The Reigning, and Thor Gods of Men. And featuring art by Stuart Immonen, John Romita Jr., Tom Rainey, and various others. Scott Eaton on the tail end. This fantastic run brings us the epic battle with the Destroyer alongside the Avengers, the fall of Asgard by the Dark Gods, among them Pericus, the Jake Olsen persona, the mystery of Mar-Know, the arrival of the Designate, Taryn, who later becomes Thor Girl after adding her powers to Odin's while he's on a kamikaze mission to take out Surtur. Dasak, the God Killer, being introduced. Thor becoming Lord of Asgard and Midgard, taking over Earth and humanity in the reigning until the rise of the rebellion that includes Thor's son and the return of Dasak in what really was an incredible finale. A great run. Wild ride. Issues 80 to 85 of Thor's second volume that followed is that terrific Ragnarok tale by Michael Oeming and Andrea DeVito that revives Roy Thomas's cyclical Ragnarok ideas as Thor fights to break the cycle for good. This must-read story that includes Captain America and Iron Man in the first act before things get wildly mythological for the second and third acts is reprinted in the Thor Disassembled trade paperback as well as in the Avengers Disassembled hardcover. Writer J. Michael Straczynski brought Thor back in a third volume of Thor in 2007, which has all been reprinted in three hardcovers or three trade paperbacks, as well as an oversized Thor by Michael J. Straczynski, or J. Michael Straczynski, omnibus hardcover, with art by Olivier Coipel and Marco Jurjevic. And the more current Kieran Gillen and Matt Fraction work on the Thor title has also been reprinted in both hardcover and trade paperback. Now, along the way, we've also been treated to several side-story limited series featuring Thor and his cast, such as Thor: The Lost Gods trade paperback, which reprints Journey into Mystery 503 to 513, when that title was revived, changing its name back from Thor, while Thor was in the Heroes Reborn universe of titles. This trade paperback features familiar Asgardian cast members discovering their true identities, having been trapped inside mortal shells and identities, and their subsequent efforts to save Asgard alongside a revived Red Norvel by Tom DeFalco, Mike Diodato Studio, and Sal Buscema. The Thor Godstorm hardcover reprints a neat little three-issue tale by Kurt Busiek and Steve Rude, where Loki convinces the greatest of all storms to turn on Thor, and we're treated to tales of their encounters during various time periods until the rogue storm joins up with a modern, weather-wielding villain to take on the Avengers. The Thor Son of Asgard trade paperback collects that entire 12-issue series, giving us tales from Thor's youth alongside Loki, Baldur, Sif, and others, and a different spin on how Thor became worthy enough to lift Mjolnir, by Akira Yoshida and Greg Cecchini. Thor Son of Asgard begins with a 6-issue challenge quest tale to earn the prize of a sword that's enchanted by Odin, which Baldur does, and a 3-issue teen romance drama with Sif, Thor, and the Enchantress, and ends with a 2-part Worthy, in which Thor enters Hela's realm to rescue Sif. Really enjoyable reads. The also very enjoyable 4-issue Loki limited series by Robert Rohde and Asad Rabik has been reprinted in 2 oversized hardcover collections. The first one's out of print and simply titled Loki, and the more recent Thor and Loki Blood Brothers is the oversized hardcover that isn't print. In this great story, we're treated to Loki's side of his history with Thor as he's smited over and over again. Poor guy. You might actually feel sorry for Loki. Thor Vikings collects this 6-issue Marvel Max limited series by Garth Ennis and Glenn Fabry in trade paperback form. I'm not sure if there was a hardcover. It's told in over-the-top Marvel Max fashion, not for the kiddies, as a group of cursed Vikings returns to modern-day Earth and wreaks havoc and devastation, mopping the floor with Thor and taking over until Thor gets his groove on thanks to aid from Doctor Strange. Thor Blood Oath reprints that 6-issue limited series in both hardcover and trade paperback, telling stories of Thor and the Warriors 3 by Michael Oeming and Scott Collins, as they embark on a challenge to gather various items on a quest that Thor agrees to the rule of not using Mjolnir as a weapon along the way. And it guest stars Hercules. And speaking of the Warriors 3, Thor Warriors 3 hardcover collects a story from Marvel Spotlight 30 by Len Wein and John Buscema, as well as Charles Vess's beautiful Warriors 3 work from Marvel Fanfares number 13, 34, 5, 6, and 7. Thor the Warriors 3 Unleashed hardcover collects stories from Thor 400, Annual 2, and Annual 17, and this, among these stories, Thor and the Warriors 3 face the Destroyer, among other threats. The Warriors 3 Dog Day Afternoon hardcover collects the recent 4-issue limited series written by Bill Willingham and drawn by Neil Edwards. The Thor Ages of Thunder oversized hardcover collects Thor Ages of Thunder, Thor Reign of Blood, Thor Man of War, and Thor God-sized super special one-shots by Matt Fraction that tell a set of somewhat interconnected tales involving Thor and Odin's interdynamics, with art mostly by Marko Djurdjevic, but joined by others, Cary Evans and Patrick Zerker among them. Really good read. Stormbreaker, The Ballad of Beta Ray Bill, collects six issues of Beta Ray Bill, post-Ragnarok goodness in trade paperback form by Michael Oeming and Andrea DeVito. Secret Invasion Thor and Siege Thor trade paperbacks collects these limited series related to those recent line-wide Marvel events by Fraction and Braithwaite, Gillen and Tan. The Secret Invasion tie-in heavily features Beta Ray Bill, who goes on to his own limited series, Hunting Down Galactus. I've not yet read the recent Iron Man Thor God Complex hardcover by Abnett and Lanning and Scott Eaton art, but it looks pretty good, involving the High Evolutionary, and it's a in post-Siege chronology, so Iron Man and Thor are coming off of not being the best of friends. And speaking of post-Siege, the Thor-Iron Man Cap team-up limited series called Avengers Prime is collected in a not-oversized hardcover, wah, wah, and it's an Asgardian adventure occurring immediately following the events of Siege, scattering our heroes throughout the Nine Realms as they battle their way back to each other and home. Captain America's barroom brawl with a bunch of ogres is worth the price of admission alone, as well as Alan Davis's fantastic representations of The Enchantress, written by Brian Michael Bendis. More recently, Thor First Thunder is a trade paperback collection by Brian Gliss and Ten Eng Huat, giving us a year one kind of retelling of Thor's origin and early battles on Earth. This ended up being a kind of a challenging read for me. It covers material that I'm roughly familiar with art by Huat that panel to panel looks really great when you kind of look at random panels and just look at the detail in the panel and stuff, but the sequential storytelling was a bit muddy for me. Each panel is really crowded by line work, so the flow of the whole page and the whole page as a piece of art together reveals little depth, making it kind of a figure ground kind of nightmare. It's cool to look through, but just not the smoothest read. Thor for Asgard is a recent six-issue limited series collected in an oversized hardcover by Robert Roddy and Simone Bianchi, telling a future, kind of alternate reality story of Asgard's worst days ever, falling into disarray with Thor as king, who can no longer lift Mjolnir, as Asgard becomes attacked from both without and within, the Rainbow Bridge gets damaged, and Ragnarok looms. A slow burn, but an interesting tale. Worth a look, although it doesn't really stand with the greatest of Thor stories. And for those of you who want to take a lighter look on Thor and Jane Foster, that's not tied to any continuity, and in my opinion would be a great read for an adolescent female, check out the 8-issue Thor the Mighty Avengers series by Roger Langridge and Chris Somney, which is collected into 2 trade paperbacks, and focuses heavily on Jane Foster and her budding romance with a new-to-Earth Thor. Verily, gang, we've made it to the end of another segment. Anon! Hope you enjoyed the ride. See you next time. Join me to help celebrate Marvel Noise's 150th episode, as well as my own 3-year anniversary as a regular contributor. Until then, take a Frost Giant out for ice cream. You'll have a pal for life. Later!
And we're back. I want to thank you, gentlemen, for your contributions, for all the work put into the segments. Naturally, they are top-notch. Keeps me coming back. The 2 one-shots that that I recently read aren't necessarily new. They're new to me, but I've had them in a I've had them in that pile that I've been mentioning, and so as I'm going through, and I'm like, hey, that looks neat. One is a one-shot in the in the family of X-Men First Class tales, that Cyclops one-shot that I read that I talked about a couple weeks ago. This is the Marvel Girl one-shot, and it is written by Joshua Hale Fieldcove, and the art, gorgeous art, seriously, it's it is some nice art, is by Nuno, N-U-N-O, Plati, P-L-A-T-I, and it is colorful. It's covered by Roger Cruz, who, of course, did a real nice job on the original X-Men First Class volumes, and he did the covers for the Cyclops issue, and according to the information at the end of this story, the Cyclops one was on sale in March, as was Angel and Iceman, and also with a pretty snazzy looking Roger Cruz cover, and I'm guessing there'll be a Beast one shot. Maybe I missed it. I hope I didn't. I want to get the Angel and Iceman one shot. The Jean Grey story was a little different in attitude, I guess, than the Cyclops one shot. The Cyclops one shot was fun. Was witty. It wasn't as serious, I'll say. It wasn't as heavy, if I can say that. It's a where Cyclops was, you know, dealing with his issues as far as, you know, coming down too hard on the team and just basically having to stick up his butt and not having a sense of humor. When I say that it was witty, it wasn't really Cyclops that was witty in that story. This is more, this kind of touches on the Jean Grey story that came out maybe a couple of years ago. It was illustrated by Mike Mayhew, and it was pretty much Jean Grey's Marvel Girl's origin. This kind of picks up after that. Jean is, she can kind of give Bruce Banner and the Hulk run for their money as far as anger management is concerned. She, I guess being the only female member on the First Class team, it's not a, I don't know. It's weird. I can't think like a girl, so I'm not really going to assume that I know what's going through her head. I have to rely on the writers for that. But, you know, Cyclops, I guess, is just trying to protect her. He's trying to defend her. She doesn't need it. And I guess maybe Warren was picking up some vibes and he's trying to, we're coming in this fight as the issue starts off, and I guess he was feeling that maybe Jean likes him and therefore maybe there's a boyfriend girlfriend thing going on that or that could develop, and she's basically squashing that and letting him know where things are, and then of course she lashes out at Bobby and at Hank, so Professor X basically just says, listen, you need to cool off, you need to chill, you need to get your head right, and go home. Just go home, visit the folks for a little while. We'll, you know, once you get your emotions, your rage, your anger in check, before you seriously hurt your teammates, your classmates, go handle yourself and you know, we're not going anywhere. Jean Grey is, at this time, one of the most powerful people in the Marvel Universe. And, you know, it's interesting how it's the women on the team. Jean Grey on the X-Men, Susan Storm, and, well, eventually Susan Storm Richards on the Fantastic Four. The women are the most powerful on the team, you know. So, naturally, smartly, Professor X needs her to be able to control that. So she goes home and sees her parents, goes back to, goes to the mall, the Hudson Valley Mall, where she and her friend Annie and Jean, best friends. Annie was, of course, the little girl that was hit by the car in the origin issue that triggered Jean Grey's psychic abilities. And so we see Jean going through the mall and seeing people that she saw a few years ago, and how they really haven't done much with their lives. They're right where she kind of left them. And there's this fight, a battle, I guess we'll say, with pretty much herself. And it works out in the end, because if it didn't, then we'd have a lot of explaining to do when it comes to those old Lee Kirby and later Uncanny, or X-Men, and then Uncanny X-Men issues where Jean Grey was a part of the team. So it all works itself out in the end. It's called From the Ashes, like I said. I think the field call had a real nice feel for Jean Grey, and pretty much the X-Men, even though there's not a whole lot of X-Men in these one-shots as a team. But I kind of dug the relationship between Professor X and Jean Grey. It's not as, it's not the friendly relationship they eventually have, but it's, he needs her to be okay. He needs her to have her head right, and this helps. So she explains that, you know, she's going to live her life from this point forward, and not just her life, but her life to the fullest for Annie. And this isn't a one shot where after I read it I was like, yeah, okay, you know, this was filler, or you know, I could have done this. It wasn't one of those. It was a good one shot. I will say that. I would like to see, when all is said and done, even though Jeff Parker isn't writing these one-shots, he wrote the first X-Men First Class, he wrote the second, and he did not write the post-Giant Size, Uncanny X-Men First Class, I guess we'll call it. It was, so he hasn't written all of them, but he wrote, you know, the original five, that team. And I would like to see all of those collections, all of those volumes collected, including these one-shots. I like this, I guess, era, this little pocket continuity. It was, it does tie into how these characters, it's canon, it's in continuity, but it's nice to read a story that isn't, you know, you don't have to know where this fits in, like that Wolverine First Class series that was basically Wolverine and Kitty Pryde going on his little adventures because she was new to the X-Men and Logan was going to teach her, to train her, to get her ready to be an X-Man. And I like being able to read some stories where I really don't have to be bogged down with what came before it and what this leads into. I know, but it's nice to just read a one-shot like this and just, you know, get familiar with a character and find out what makes them tick. And this reads different than if this story came out in the 70s or even the 80s. You know, it's a new spin. It's a new take on a character that, well, I was going to say that we don't see too much these days, but I'm a little behind in my X-Men reading, so you'll tell me if Jean Grey is back. The other one-shot is Captain America and the Falcon, and Captain America is in this one-shot, but the Captain America that's in the first story is Bucky, but only for a little bit, and the Captain America that's in the reprint is Steve Rogers. This is called Spikes. It is written by Rob Williams, and this is Rob Williams that wrote Class War, that Chris and I talked about on 11 O'Clock Comics a few weeks back. Art by Rebecca Isaacs. And it's one of those situations where I think an inker is might be a little necessary. The art is still it's still good art. It's strong art. I can, you know, you can see who all the players are. You know what's going on. Nothing is confusing. This is a for those who may not know, I am a big Falcon fan. I like Sam Snap Wilson, and it's a story that he that kind of reminds me of that four-issue miniseries where we've had a couple of the issues as Marvel Tales segments. But I like it when Sam kind of goes home, has to go back to the neighborhood. There aren't, yeah, he's an Avenger, he's Captain America's buddy, but he never forgets where he came from, and it's he's a character who he'll fight in outer space, but he knows that he's there's a place where he fits in, where he feels comfortable, and he knows that he can take care of the people in his neighborhood, the people where he grew up. He knows being part of that, being one of them, that he can help them. He can assist them. He can answer the call a lot better than, say, Thor or Iron Man, and I mean, pretty much any other Marvel hero would feel out of place in Sam's neighborhoods, and it's, they'll do what they can. They'll still be there. They'll help. They'll prevent people from harming one another, but they can't relate, can't understand the plight or what any of the residents are going through, but Sam can, and Sam has to know when Falcon can take care of business and when Snap has to take care of business. I guess he's kind of like Batman in that regard, where you have Batman, you have Matches Malone, you have Bruce Wayne's wallet, and so there are times where you have to take the mask off. You're still that same person underneath, but the clothes do make the man. They do make a difference. And the story is it ends on a happier note than it could have. It's not the ideal ending. It's not the ending that that Randy's mother, Randy, is who Sam is looking for, Bradley is Bradley's missing. Bradley's mother enlists Sam's help, and Sam has to look for Bradley. Sam finds Bradley, and Mom wanted Bradley found because she wanted him to have a better life. And there were football scholarships involved. And like I said, it ends on a happy note, but not the happy note that Mom wanted it to end in. And it's you know, we can see that there are seeds planted here that hopefully we can touch back on in a later date. I mean, you have a little kid who whips out a gun to kill Falcon, because, you know, he wanted to kill himself an Avenger, you know, because, hey, what kind of trophy would that make? That'd be so cool. I popped me an Avenger, and it's like, come on, you know, it's not a really uplifting story, but still a if you like the Falcon, check this out, because I like the Falcon. I'm a fan of Sam Wilson. I don't know what to tell you. The reprint is Captain America and the Falcon, number 144. Still 20 cents. This is the issue where the Cap and Falcon split up. And, well, not the Cap, just Cap, because that's his nickname. And it's also the introduction to a new costume for the Falcon, which is really weird. No wings, but he's got this grappling hook on his left hand, and the hook is in a bird's claw. But his right hand is not gloved, and I mean, sure, he's a social worker, and the people in his neighborhood know him, so they might know that, they might be able to put two and two together and see that Sam and the Falcon are the same person. But why would you not wear a glove? I mean, you know, Superman, I get it. You know, he can vibrate his fingertips so that he doesn't leave fingerprints. But, you know, seriously? You know, but this, the backup, the reprint, is written by Gary Friedrich and art by Graham Morrow. And I am a big fan of Graham Morrow. And this was, this had some Gene Colan looking to it. It was a neat story. I'm guessing we didn't get the full issue here. We just really got Falcon's story. But Falcon kind of goes solo on his own in this story. And man, there are like 6-7 panels on a page. This is a packed, dense story in just a few pages. And the art, you know, I got into it a little while ago, and I'm not going to try to get into it again about technology and artists putting everything they can on the pages in those panels. And I mean, there are really no blank panels here. I mean, there's their backgrounds drawn in every panel, and it's, there's funky designs on the curtains, there are window blinds, I mean, and the patterns on these people's clothes, and everybody's, you know, oh, geez, but Captain America trying to be down, saying it, you know, right on, and I can dig it, and it was a little tough to take, but it was, I enjoyed both one-shots. I really enjoyed, it says Captain America and the Falcon on the cover, but I'm calling it the Falcon one-shot, because it even says one-shot, and then you get to the last page, and it says next issue, Captain America and the First 13. Okay, so there's also Captain America and Crossbones, Captain America and the Secret Avengers, and Captain America and Batroc. So, there seem to be one a week of these Captain America, and so I'm guessing these are going to be collected for the movie. In any case, enjoyed them both. I realized I rambled on for a bit here. Sorry. I'm going to let it go now. I'm done. I've been catching up on my Black Panther, so I'll have that for next time. I want to thank Steve and Rick and the Colonel and you for listening, and we will be back soon. Marvelnoise at comicbooknoise.com, 206-312-5239 if you want to leave a voicemail. Marvelnoise.com is the website, and bullpenbulletinspodcast.com/forum if you want to check out the forum for 11 o'clock comics for Marvel Noise. And check out the other shows on the comic book, under the Comic Book Noise family banner. Those can be found at comicbooknoisefamily.com. I'm done. I'm out of here. Hope you all have a great week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Christopher.